Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion on this beautiful May day in New Jersey. And our topic today is mortals and immortals, and we are so glad you could join us. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And we welcome you all. And we will start with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 120 of Watchers, Prayers, and Argument, and 442 of Science and Health. Inasmuch as I am God's child, spiritual and not material, I must be perfect. I am whole, I am free, I have all I need every hour. I am without fear, without anxiety. I live in spirit, not in matter, error. I'm not in danger. No one can harm me or deprive me of any good. I know no such thing as pain, suffering, or disease, for I am a reflection of life, truth, and love. I am never disappointed or grieved. The harmony of my being is never broken because I live in the infinite. No condition of the body or the presence of anyone's personality is essential to my happiness, for God good only is the spring of all my joy. My life is hid with Christ in God. Therefore, I am immortal, for nothing can be lost or die in God. 442 of Science and Health, Christian Scientist. Be a law to yourself that mental malpractice cannot harm you either when asleep or when awake. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. All right. Watching point.
Watch number 396. Watch that you realize each day that mortal man can never be depended upon. Could you depend on a puppet or marionette, every moment of which is controlled by the whim of the operator? Mortal man is a puppet with a mind that is human in belief and that is controlled by the consolidation of universal thought. His consciousness is subject at all times to being invaded, changed, and influenced mesmerically without his knowledge or consent. His desires may be inflamed or quenched, his impulses altered or reversed, his conclusions shaped unconsciously, and prejudices, envy, and hatred may be induced in him. All the while, he nurtures such suggestions as his own. His whole effort is to sell himself, not God, and yet his most intimate thoughts and desires cannot be depended upon until he has learned through Christian Science how to protect his thinking and to relinquish the human mind for the divine. In a pamphlet called Christian Science History, Mrs. Eddy once wrote as follows, indicating that mortal mind and its erroneous suggestions are totally unreliable. Quote, without this understanding, he cannot separate the tares from the wheat and destroy the tares. He cannot divide between an impartation from the immortal or divine mind and the temptation or the evil suggestion of human thought and argument. But this must be done in order to obey the former and resist and destroy the latter. And not till it is done will he be protected and imbued with wisdom and power to rise superior to evil suggestions. This attainment is indispensable, whereby to establish a student on the scientific basis of Christian Science.
Wow, what a description. Ooh. Of mortal man, and how to not be one. Okay, any comments?
Yeah. Well, one of the first things when I came here was I was taught to, the church here teaches that to start the day knowing before you get out of bed that there's only one mind. God is the only mind. God is my mind. And so I've been doing that ever since I came here. And then in the, things to handle daily, one of the first things it says when I awake is to declare I shall have no other mind before divine mind and become fully conscious of this and then adhere to it throughout the day, and then the evil cannot touch me.
Beautiful. Thank you. I know somewhere, too, I read where Mrs. Eddy said this, that, you know, God is my mind, the only mind, and all my moments are his. She says that first thing in the morning. And that's a beautiful thought, to know that all your moments are his. Go ahead.
I don't know where I read it, but I include, and this mind cannot drift into evil.
Yes, that's in both works. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mrs. Eddy, yes, thank you. And it cannot. But it's so helpful in this watching point, saying you have to have this understanding or you can't separate the tares from the wheat and destroy the tares. And that people who don't have this understanding or go around with prejudices, envy, hatred, and they don't even know they're doing it. See, Adam man. So thank God Mrs. Eddy is here to destroy that false belief. And yes, so we can determine. And we were taught here one simple thing, you know, is this a thought from God that loves me? And if it isn't a thought from God that loves me, then you don't listen to it. And how often do you listen to thoughts that aren't from a God that loves you?
I think it's your own thought, though.
You think it's your own thought, yes. And I love last night in the watch message, that hymn 324, you know, take my moments and my days, let them flow in ceaseless praise. It goes on, every part of you to give to God, and, you know, ending with, I am thine and I will be ever only all for thee. We must always think of ourselves as sons and daughters of the King, a loving King who has all good for you. There was a beautiful article from Carrie, again, about this idea of inheritance. It starts out about a woman who had very little, and so every time she'd go shopping or anything, she was counting all her pennies and worried about all of that. And then she got a huge inheritance and had all the money that she ever could want. And when she would go out shopping, again, she had to break that habit of being so, you know, careful with every penny. She realized, well, oh, yeah, I could buy this if I wanted to. And it's like, you know, to us who have this huge inheritance of God, freedom from sin, disease, and death, but do we act like it, or do we go around, you know, limiting ourselves that we can't do this, we can't do that because we've got this problem or that problem, rather than knowing that all good is yours right here and right now, and that inheritance is all divine, and you are subject to the King. And how we must love that King when you think how much he loves us.
But often I think it's a habit. It becomes just part of you. You know, you live it and you live it and you live it the same way. And yet you want things to change, but you haven't changed the way you think. You haven't changed who you are, even though you're learning differently from others.
Thank you. Absolutely. It is just a habit, just like that woman had a hard time remembering, oh, I can buy whatever I want now, but she was in that habit of being very, very careful. So in that article, it says, the thought suggested by this story was that we, you and I, have also received good news, which comes to us well authenticated in Christian Science. We are heirs of a great inheritance, more vast and enduring than that which came to the woman of whom we have just read. We are heirs, joint heirs with Christ, children of the King. Our supply is indeed unlimited, and we are given dominion over all the earth. Do we realize it? If so, our actions often fail to show it. We, too, observe the strictest economy, not only in matters of finance, but also in health, peace, and happiness. Do we look at our scanty income and say it's not sufficient to meet the demands made upon it? Is our supply of health so small that we cannot eat what others eat and cannot do what others do? Is our measure of happiness reduced to an occasional smile? If so, then we are forgetful of the fact that all things are ours, and we are Christ, and Christ is God's. So ask yourself, are you going around like that?
In the prayer, Florence read, "I am never disappointed or grieved," and that really stuck out to me. And just imagine the love and the abundance that would have to be there to make that possible.
Yes. Yeah, that was a beautiful prayer. Thank you. Covering everything.
I love the idea of giving the day back to God. This really puts everything in the present and realizing that present perfection.
Thank you. And I love, you know, Elsie puts it, God is, wants us to spend our day with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's spend our days with God. An ever-present help. And we can never feel lonely or grieved if we know that. And all the good that, you know, maybe a missing person, missing in your immediate life, was and still is, came from God. So therefore, all that good is available right this very moment with you always. We must always impersonalize the good that that people express, as well as the not so good. Mm-hmm. The good is from God, the not so good is from animal magnetism.
And this idea of, you know, give our day to God, or give your life to God, or, you know, serve God, it all boils down to, you know, God owns it anyway. God controls it anyway. So if we're not serving God, if we're not giving our life to God, if we're not giving our day to God, we're fooling ourselves. You know, we're trying to make a reality out of something other than God.
Yeah, we're trying to be unreal.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a matter of just not fooling ourselves to thinking that there's something other than God. Because it's all God's anyway. And the sooner we realize it and make it real to ourselves, the better off we're all going to be.
Yeah. I mean, I am all, it's a law. I think about it and I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
So don't ignore the facts.
In Herbert Rieke's, I guess it's one of his addresses on immortality, he says, "Don't be a mortal living in a state of mortality. Be an immortal living in this glorious state of immortality, enjoying everything immortal, beautiful, good, and true. Live in that eternal mind that knows no beginning and no end, no birth and no death. Live in that perfect life that exists through all time. It is eternity itself. In no other way can you demonstrate the infinite capacities of healing in Christian Science."
Now, is this going to be easy?
Never. It's no. worth fighting for. It's worth doing.
No, because the false beliefs that others hold about you or in general aren't going to like what you're doing, because it means the end to the false beliefs. So when they're on the way out, they will struggle for their own existence, which is not existence. And we have to know that so that we don't get sucked into giving them life and compromising ourselves. So, yeah, we have to stand up for what we know is right. We have to have faith in what we know is right.
And persist in it.
And, you know, you wouldn't have any problem knowing that 2 + 2 = 4, right? That wouldn't be a big thing to try to get that. You would right away reject 2 + 2 = 5. Right away you would reject it. Well, these facts are every bit as concrete as 2 + 2 = 4. We're just taught otherwise. You were in a school where you were being taught 2 + 2 = 5, but it was never so. Never so. So remember, stay with your facts. And even if you don't believe them at first, stay with it. Truth must manifest itself, as Mrs. Eddy says.
You know, because the false beliefs, false material beliefs, tell you that spirit isn't substantial, or that soul isn't real, or soul is in matter. Now, just because these false beliefs tell you that doesn't mean that they have dominion over the truth. All they can do is suggest. And then you have a choice. You can either reject it with the truth or go along with it. And if you reject it with the truth, there will be a fight. There may even be a struggle. But the truth will be victorious, and you will feel it.
And you're not alone in the struggle. I think Carol was trying to say
something. No, sorry.
I remember hearing the reading a long time ago that it says, I never said it would be easy. I just said to go. It's always been such a help to me.
Yeah.
Just go. Just keep going.
Keep going. Good. Thank you. Yeah.
Listen, Bicknell Young says a wonderful thing about if you have like a whole lot to do in a day. And it also could apply to if you have a whole lot of, you know, seeming error piling up. You only have one thing to do, and that is to know the truth. And that's very helpful because, you know, you can't get mixed up in all that baloney. You just have to come out and know what you know. And it's provable.
Yes. Yeah, that's his article, Day. I love that, too. If you ever think you have so much to do, all you have to do is know the truth. All day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how often you felt really bogged down, and then you start getting into the work, and then by 3 you're done.
Right, that's right. That's it. Mrs. Evans said she would, you know, go over and over in her mind all she had to do. She had so much to do, and then she realized if she'd just get up and do it, it would be over like in 10 minutes. And guilty too, going, oh, I got this. You keep thinking about it. Just get up and do it. Get it done.
Even in the night.
You have to, even in the night. And I love this. I've been working with this a lot. This is Mrs. Eddy's evening prayer. And part of it says, and think about this, pray it before you go to bed. Pray it in the morning. Laying aside every fear, put yourself entirely in his charge. Quiet yourself with the thought that he who has all power will protect you, give you health, and all you need in abundance. And know whether sleeping or waking, you are safe because your life is hid with Christ in God. And it goes on, but I love that. You put your entire being in his charge. And then quiet yourself. Stop all this foofing around. And He who has all power. I mean, that's, again, how wonderful. All power. There's nothing that can come against God. Mm-hmm. And he will give you, he'll protect you, give you all health and everything you need in abundance. This is the King that we serve and give our lives to. And why not? So, Jeremy, you want to read the golden text?
Romans. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God.
Thank you. So there we are again, sons and daughters. And then this prayer, Colossians 1, that I've given many times, but to those who haven't heard it, I heard it was a preacher once a long time ago talk about this Colossians 1 and how it is a perfect and complete an impersonal prayer, certainly for your children or for anyone, because, you know, you think, you sit there thinking, oh, gosh, you know, I want my son to get good grades. Oh, goodness, you know, my daughter's going out with the wrong guy. Oh, my gosh, what's, you know, or my husband is out drinking. I don't know. You can have a list of things that you're worried about and maybe pray specifically about. But this prayer is the one. For this cause also, since the day we heard it, we're not going to cease praying for you. And we desire that you be filled with a knowledge of his will, all wisdom and spiritual understanding. That's a good thought, right? Instead of foofing and fiffing about this and that, pray that whoever this is will have them be filled with a knowledge of God's will, with wisdom and understanding. And then pray that this person, including yourself, might walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing, being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. Hey, that's a good prayer, right? That'll work. Mm-hmm. And then this person or persons or whoever will be strengthened with all might according to his glorious power, unto all patience and long suffering with joyfulness. So pray that this person is strengthened through God. And then give thanks unto the Father, which has made us meet to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in light. So again, our inheritance from God. And we need to know this for ourselves and for everyone. There's no earthly inheritance, only God, our King. We receive all good from him, our ancestries, the beautiful, the good, and the pure. It's in the lesson once again. So pray that. I mean, I pray it every day. Colossians 1. All right.
And then he'll deliver you from the power of darkness.
Yes.
And translate us into the kingdom of his dear son. This word translate is used a few times. And Mrs. Eddy talks about translating. And I think it's important to understand what that means. It means when you look at material things, don't give them power, but rather ask God, what is the spiritual import of this? And if you have the Spirit of God in your consciousness, you will not be impressed by spirit, by material appearances, either good or bad. And you will, by keeping your thought, your consciousness in the Spirit of God, you will rise above material temptations and material problems.
Thank you. And Mrs. Wilcox will probably end with that. There's a whole chapter on scientific translations, which says just that. We must see what the spiritual truth to everything, and that's translating it into its proper category, spirit. And there too, if you know anyone who seems to be in the dark, in the darkness, on drugs, or misled in any way, prayer is, he's delivered from that, he or she, and is translated into the kingdom of the dear son, of his dear son. So this prayer covers everything, and it's powerful. Okay, now we'll go into what some people wrote about. Chardell.
All right, in the Bible, Matthew 5, it says, I think to be immortal is to be meek. That's part of it.
And what does Matthew 5 say?
Oh, I'm sorry. All right, let's see.
It's blessed are the meek.
Blessed are the
meek.
For they shall inherit the earth, right. And then Mrs. Roberts wrote something about this, the meek. She calls it, her title is Meekness and Restoration by Florence Roberts. I would like to share this part. Meekness is a quality to attain if we are to be made whole. The word is vastly misused, as many think of it as meaning weakness. Far from it. It represents the calm strength of one who knows who he is, bends with the Father's will because he is sure of the power at hand. Such a one walks conforming to whatever shape it is being divinely led to take, because he has no human ambition, but trusts and rests completely in the Father's care. It is an imperative quality if one is to be restored or put back into his original state of perfection.
Thank you. I think that's one of the best things I've ever read on meekness, Florence. Do you want to add anything to that?
Well, I've learned it. It's something that I had to learn. And not that, I mean, I was on the other side, you know, being so in the regular sense of humble, you know, so that you don't think so much of yourself. But I see that to be meek, to be used by God, it's different. There's a strength in it. And I just thought that, yeah, this is, you see, I don't know how, I wrote it quite a while ago, but it just came for me to write it, and I wrote it.
It's mental, I know that.
Yeah.
And you wrote the truth.
You wrote the truth. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have a misconception about the word meek. They think it is weak, but it's not. It's I think the definition is submitting to the divine will of God, mm-hmm. the right definition. Mm-hmm. So, and Jesus, meek as he was mighty.
Yeah. Mary Baker Eddy.
You saw Mrs. Eddy, yeah.
Right. And also Mrs. Eddy, and this is in Pond and Purpose, which we talked about last week, but the second, the baptism of the Holy Ghost, Mrs. Eddy says, through the ascension of spirituality, God, the divine principle of Christian Science, literally governs the aims, ambitions, and acts of the scientist. And this is where we want to get to. And that is meekness. Because as we saw in The Watching Point and other places, and what Florence was just reading, saying, you know, otherwise people get ambitious. Yeah. You know, it's so interesting in The Chosen, because the boys of thunder, right?
Yeah. James
and John.
James and John.
Yeah, we just...
Sons of Zebedee.
Yeah, we just rewatched the one, you know, where they were wanting to strike lightning down on the Samaritans. And Jesus said, really? It really puts all that into place. And then later, you know, when their mother wanted them to sit on the right and left hand of God, that's not meekness. That's gross ambition and willfulness. And you will end up in trouble. Again, as our Watching Point said, whether you know it or not, you better separate the tares from the wheat. And those are the tares.
And I think it's clear after being here a while, if you were suddenly thrown into a position you haven't earned, it would not go well at all.
No, we should not be careful what you wish for.
Yes.
Certainly, Boston, after Mrs. Eddy passed, they found themselves in the position they didn't earn, and they ruined everything.
Thank you.
And then they disobeyed Daniel.
And I think
bad idea.
It was a power struggle for some of them anyway. Ambition, greed for some of them, the malicious. Some of them were ignorant and just got wrapped up in it. All right. Lenny, do you have what you wrote to me?
I do.
Go ahead. Thank you.
So after this week and my testimony on feeling pressure and things at work, I was still working with that idea, and I was reading the passage about be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And that really spoke to me. So I looked formed, made to resemble, reduced to a likeness of, made agreeable to, or suited. And that really seemed to me like that fit with this idea of pressure, because pressure tries to conform us. It tries to move us or, you know, fit us into something that maybe isn't of God, or usually isn't of God. In my case, like a schedule that isn't God's or a belief that isn't from God. And instead of lifting us up, it pushes us down. And then converse to that is transform or transformed, which means this, well, the spiritual definition in Webster's 1828 is to change the natural disposition and temper of man from a state of enmity to God and his law into the image of God, or into a disposition and temper conformed to the will of God. So I love the two, you know, those two words and the two different meanings. And it definitely has helped me with this idea of pressure.
That is so helpful. Thank you. The difference, conforming, you know, just going along, not standing up with anything. Okay. Never saying no to the transformation, the image of God. Temper conformed to the will of God.
Maybe you have to be meek to do so.
You do.
Totally. You do.
And as I've mentioned again many times, what was the only time Mrs. Eddy mentioned pressure?
In the textbook.
Out from the material world and be separate.
Yes, come out from the material world and be separate. And you have to be willing to stand up for what God's telling you to do. To say no, not be a people pleaser, but do what you need to do. And if you do that, you will not come under this other sense of pressure.
I think it's quite a temptation when you feel like, oh, but I have to do this. I have to do this first. But always if we remember God first and we really make God first, things are different. This is what I found.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the beginning of that sentence in the textbook is important. It says Christian Scientists are under the constant pressure of the apostolic command. In other words, if we're under the constant pressure of God's command, we can't feel any other pressure. We won't be able to. It'll be impossible. But the challenge is to be under the stay under the constant pressure of God's commands.
Thank you.
In The Chosen, before the Sons of Thunder got their name, they were sitting around the table and they were trying to figure out schedules and all that.
Oh, right. That's right. And Mary kept saying, you know, Jesus does what he does when he wants to do it. You can't chain that in. That's exactly right. That's what they thought they had to do. All this pressure, you know, you pressure yourself. I pressure myself. It's not usually out. You think it's coming from the outside, but usually you're, oh, again, you're ruminating, going around and around with all this stuff, and you pressure yourself. But that's good, the constant pressure of the apostolic command. And that's the only pressure we should yield to or have. And I tell people when they're under pressure, it's animal magnetism. And slow down, stop, don't do it. Don't let anyone pressure you into buying something or going somewhere or even rushing to answer the phone. Stop. Take your time. Don't stately goings of mind. Don't yield to that because it's animal magnetism.
Well, and I think y'all talked about it too at the beginning, that mortal mind or human is easily swayed by the beliefs of the world. And that is clearly a world belief. People hold that very closely, that there is stress and that's why you have to have happy hour. And that's why, you know, thank God it's Friday. Like it's literally right. I mean, TGIF. Like, what are you escaping from? So we have to agree with our adversary quickly. Like, yes, yeah. I see the claim, but that's not the pressure that I'm under. So you acknowledge it, but that it has no power over you. And that's the first step to breaking that false power that the world would try to exert over you. And if you're not claiming that, you know, it's probably happening, what do they say? It's a world belief, you know, you have to handle it.
Yes, you do. I mean, I can even remember my grandmother saying, haste makes waste, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where's the...
I really...
Right. Go ahead.
I really like the trademark, or whatever you want to call it, the of the chosen. I think about it often. The going against the current, the fish that are going against the current, and of course in Christian Science, it's the one mind going against it's going against the mortal belief, you know, and it's not easy, but like we've said, but that's what following Christ means. We're going to go against the current of mortal belief.
Yes.
So we've signed up for it. That's what we've chosen to do. But that's a good thing. And I don't know, whoever came up with that love is just perfect for those who are following the teachings of Christ Jesus. That's what we're all about, is going against the current of mortal belief in every single, you know, we've mentioned it many times just this morning all the way, so it has to be done. But we do it with joy and so that, you know, and that's what Christianity is about.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the third citation in Science and Health is all about. Christian Science, properly understood, disabuse the human mind of material beliefs, which war against spiritual facts. What this trademark doesn't show is the warfare that's going on between the fish. Because it doesn't represent people, it represents ideas versus beliefs.
Yeah, thank you. Who else was trying to speak, Elizabeth?
Well, I was just saying that's kind of taking up the cross. That's what we're doing. We're stepping, being separate. That's all taking up the cross, right?
Yes.
And it's a joyous thing. We have to remember that.
Yes. Yeah. And some people won't like it, especially when you're first starting out and they're used to being... They're used to, you know, telling you and you'll do whatever they tell you to do. And then suddenly you're not. They might not like it at first, but as Mrs. Eddy says, they will respect you and eventually they'll get it. It's something you have to do and you have to start wherever you are. And if you haven't done it, you have to start today if you want. And if you don't, you'll just be dragged along. Mrs. Evans would say the swirling currents of mortal mind. It's not a good place to be. finally you have to say, save, Lord, or I perish. So, all right, Nancy.
Yes, about Matthew 18, becoming little children. Except you be converted and become as little children, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And I liked in Webster, 1828, converted, turned or be changed, to change the heart and the moral character. And I looked up humble. I liked to make meek and submissive to the divine will. And in Benson's commentary on Bible Hub, except ye be converted, turn from worldly and carnal views and desires, and become like little children, free from pride, covetousness, and ambition, and resemble them in humility, sincerity, docility, and disengagement of affection from the things of the present life, which excite the ambition of grown men, ye shall be so far from becoming the greatest in the kingdom that ye shall not so much as enter into it. The first step toward entering into the kingdom of grace is to become as little children, lowly in heart, knowing ourselves, utterly ignorant and helpless, and hanging wholly on our Father who is in heaven for a supply for all of our wants. Expect to be from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God. Except we be entirely inwardly changed and renewed in the image of God, we cannot enter in the kingdom of glory. Thus must every man be converted in this life, or he can never enter into eternal life. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself, he that has the greatest measure of humility, joined with the sister graces of resignation, patience, meekness, gentleness, and long-suffering, shall be the greatest in Christ's kingdom. Whosoever rests satisfied with the place, the station, and office which God assigns him, whatever it may be, and meekly receives all the divine instructions and complies with them, even though contrary to his own inclinations, and prefers others in honor to himself, such a person is really great in the kingdom of heaven or of God. And it reminded me so much of the evening prayer, which my practitioner recently gave me, to just turn yourself entirely into God's care. That's how you become a child, just humble and meek.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. And remember, too, I have to feel I always have to say this, although I talk about God a king, or he's not a person. We all know that. He's a spirit. But sometimes these things just help in your understanding for it at the time. And I always think of Jesus always calling him Father. Very rarely did he say God or Lord. It was always Father. He had that close relationship to him, his Father. Mrs. Eddy has expanded that to Father, Mother, God. So whatever brings him close to you, he's certainly individual consciousness. Yes, that's how close he is. And we are at one with him. Thank you, Nancy.
There's another article that talks about how Mrs. Eddy would say Mother Love a lot.
Oh, yes, that she refers to God almost always as Mother Love. And, you know, she was very, very close to her own mother. So that's how she liked to think of it. Him, her, it, whatever. And in thinking of little children, I just remember watching, you know, if you ever watched a little child learn to walk and they get up and what happens?
They fall down.
And they get up and they fall down. And they get up and they fall down. Now, do they ever, when they fall down, say, oh, no, this is terrible. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I'm so embarrassed. I'm falling down. I'll never do this. I can't get it. It's just awful. Oh, dear me.
I guess I'm not.
Sometimes they laugh instead.
But I'm not worthy to walk.
They have the resignation that Nancy just talked about.
Yes. And so must we be. You know, if you're going to ever do anything, yeah, you'll make mistakes. You'll fall down, get back right up and start over again, doing it again, meekly laughing at it. No problems.
Like my son used to do. He'd jump back up. I'm okay.
I'm okay.
Yeah. Lincoln, one of his quotes was, if first you don't succeed, try again. So, you know, I mean, he was so humble too. I'm sure. I guess he was had a reverent relationship with God.
Sure did.
Well, and as Florence's article points out, true humility, true meekness recognizes the strength that God is and knows that that's all the strength that there is. Without that strength, we don't have strength or intelligence or wisdom or anything else good.
You think you have, but you don't.
And it's sobering, you know, to think you will not get into the kingdom of God unless you have this quality of childlikeness. So, Linda, you can read what Mrs. Eddy wrote from Miscellaneous Writings.
Okay. Quote, "Beloved children, the world has need of you, and more as children than as men and women. It needs your innocence, unselfishness, faithful affection, uncontaminated lives. You need also to watch and pray that you preserve these virtues unstained and lose them not through contact with the world. What grander ambition is there than to maintain in yourselves what Jesus loved and to know that your example, more than words, makes morals for mankind," end quote.
Thank you.
And that was exclamation. Morals for mankind, exclamation.
Thank you. It's very beautiful and important. Yeah. And that's how we stay young too, right?
Yeah.
And you can see that. I'm grateful in The Chosen. There was a whole episode 3, about him with the children, how much he loved them and showed a beautiful example of that love. And also Louise sent me an article, As a Little Child by Ella Hoag, which is also good. I think we might have it on our website. People can read that. And then the story in the lesson about Samuel. He was a child of prayer, wasn't he? And because of that prayer of Hannah, it brought forth something wonderful. And his receptivity to the truth, you know, he was able to hear God's voice calling him, as Mrs. Eddy was too.
Yeah. In a time when there wasn't anybody listening or hearing.
Thank you. That's very important. At a time when no one was listening or hearing, Samuel was brought forth through Hannah's prayer.
Yeah.
And if you'll notice in the Bible, many times when the woman was barren and couldn't have children, some wonderful thing came forth, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's because, Sarah, yeah, that's because of the prayer. It wasn't just, you know, not really praying and yearning for this to come about. So
I just think it's very beautiful thing to think about, too, for our children, that she says, I lent him to the Lord. And that's why Sunday school is so important, teaching them the Bible and just giving them this truth. It's, there's nothing else. They should have nothing else but that.
Yes.
And we must.
Thank you.
They may not go work in a church like he did, but we do lend them to the Lord.
Yeah, and their lives will be all the better for that.
Yes.
I remember reading once with Nathaniel Hawthorne, who isn't a Christian Scientist or anything. You know, he's a well-known author, and his daughter was dying, and they didn't think there was any hope for her. And the wife, sitting by praying for her, gave her to God. Mm-hmm. And is here. So, excuse me, I thought that was such a beautiful story. That's where I read it. I never forgot it, though. So if you have children, you make sure you give them to God. They're not yours, just as we talked about earlier. No personal ownership. And your husband or anybody, give them to God, and they will come back to you, and they will do great things. But when you're trying to control and tell them what to do all the time and worried about them all the time, then they're not free to be who God made them to be. Yes, you guide them and you love them, but you give them to God. It always works out. Sometimes it takes a while, sometimes not. So in this really, it's a very good article by Effie Mason about Samuel, given to me by Carrie. She talks about Eli. The high priest Eli was the highest idea of God recognizable to the Hebrews, but his light wanes. Samuel symbolizes the growth of a higher spiritual consciousness that was to come out of this state of darkness. And that's what Linda was saying. And we can know that too. Whoever God needs to carry forth his plan can be brought forth at the right time. And it will be. So, all right. So let's see. The bell has rung. I don't know what to close on. I have so many good things. Excuse me. Well, I guess it'll be this one. Thank you.
This is from an article entitled Stretch Forth Thine Hand by Bertie M. Smith from a 1929 sentinel. Quote, to receive even a material gift, one must necessarily reach out for it. And if the gift is truly desired, the one reaching out for it will make sure that the outstretched hand is empty in order the more readily to receive the gift. If the hand is already filled, one cannot receive a gift, even if one desires it. Mrs. Eddy tells us in Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures, page 130, that we cannot add to the contents of a vessel already full. All Christian scientists have, at some time, reached out mentally for healing. Sometimes the healing has been received instantaneously. And sometimes a longer period of time has been required. The fact remains, however, that truth has always been ready for us, waiting to be received whenever we are ready to receive it, through surrendering that which is false. When, emptied of wrong thinking, we reach out for healing, the ever-present truth will enter and immediately accomplish the healing. But if, while seeking truth, we retain in consciousness thoughts of jealousy, hatred, rivalry, selfishness, pride, personal attachment, and partiality, truth cannot enter, since the vessel is already full. In such a case, the first step is to prepare a place for the truth, and this is accomplished by casting out the errors which are darkening our mentality. Truth enters thought as error is cast out. If at first we succeed in eliminating only one erroneous thought, consciousness is to that extent prepared to receive the truth. And the result is shown in an improved physical condition. This encourages us to put forth greater effort to cast out other errors of belief, in order that we may enjoy more of health and harmony. And when, finally, all wrong thinking is replaced by right thinking, we shall find the healing which we have stretched forth our hand to receive. End quote.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.